The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
If I can be serious for a minute, without being interrupted.
Excuse me!
What? What?
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
We don't just set the bar.
We are the bar.
Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berga. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast and Instagram and Snapchat as well. Also follow us on the Facebook page, facebook.com/High Spot Podcast. So much to talk about. We're going to be joined by Marty Elias. He is a senior official referee for Lucha Underground, star of GLOW, and former WWE referee. We're going to talk Raw 25 and so much more. But Trendsetter, how you doing, man?
I am doing great, Jeff. Excited to be here on the High Spot Podcast. Guys, don't forget to leave a 5-star rating review in iTunes. You can also follow us on SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. And also make sure you catch us on the networks we're associated with. Can't thank them enough. Shining Wizards and B Plus Player Radio.
Yeah, and don't forget that our High Spot Podcast YouTube channel is up and running. We've got exclusive interviews with such stars as new Impact Tag Team Champions LAX, Alberto El Patron, Sienna the Savage, our best wishes and hopefully for a speedy recovery for her. We've got Bullet Club members, The Villain, Marty Scurll, and Adam Hangman Page, as well as Jay Lethal and Joshua Woods. Plus, you can catch video from High Spot Podcast's miniseries, The Adventures of the Trendsetter. New video is uploaded there. You can catch lots of new interviews from the Trendsetter, Brian Berga, on his amazing show that is just picking up so much traction. But definitely check out the YouTube channel, High Spot Podcast. Lots to talk about today, Trendsetter. So, what's going on?
What's going on right now, Jeff, is that Raw is celebrating their 25th anniversary. It's exciting. We talked last week about how old we feel for the mere fact it's been 25 years, but it's just a testament to the WWE. It's a testament to Vince McMahon and his gigantic grapefruits, Jeff, because he's been at the forefront of this and still continues to be at the forefront of all of WWE programming and allowing this show to continue for this extended period of time, which most shows don't really do, is a testament to the man and a testament to the company. I'm excited for it.
We're going to get into that with Marty Elias, who is our guest this week. We'll also talk some top 10 because they also reveal their top 10 moments. So we'll see if they're worthy of his approval or not. But we'll, you know, lots of great info from our interview coming up with Marty Elias. You can catch him on Twitter at MartyElias1967, former WWF official. So much insight. So looking forward to talking to him. But let's get started with some WWE signee news. And listen, doesn't get much bigger than these three names that have officially signed with WWE. They will head to the Performance Center. They are en route, if not there already. Let's talk about the first one, Ricochet, Trevor Mann. Listen, this is without a doubt one of the biggest acquisitions they've made. No question about the talent, Bri. But the thing is, can he succeed, not just on the NXT level, but can he succeed when he makes it to WWE, the main roster?
Well, here's the thing, Jeff. We've heard it throughout, you know, people talking about how talented Ricochet is. I haven't had the chance personally, Jeff, to see him perform in the ring.
Great guy, by the way, though.
Seems to be a great guy. You met him at WrestleCon in Orlando. Seems like a really nice guy. Nothing but great things and praise about the work he does in the ring. It's always been the question of what he can do outside the ring, meaning grabbing the microphone, drawing an audience attention. Can you do it outside the ring? Because as much as I'm a huge fan, Jeff, of the in-ring product and telling the story and letting that be your business card, letting that speak for you, it's so important, so pivotal nowadays to be able to talk on the microphone, to be able to draw an audience in and say, listen, you don't have to do all the flips, all the fancy stuff which he's known for, which I'm sure he's going to do, but when you're on the road as much as the WWE is and you're doing that night in and night out, which he has been doing it because he's been booking himself independently to keep him busy, you know, the body eventually will say no more. I can't do it.
Well, here's great point, too, by the way, that you said about the promo skills, but I'm kind of more concerned about finding that median between the high-flying and the WWE moves, the WWE way.
That's what I was gonna get to,
So, yeah, so you wonder whether he will be able to adjust that because, you know, the fans know him. You know, they watch the YouTube. They watch all of the other independents, so they know what he's about. Can he find that way like AJ Styles kind of did? Because he's kind of held back a little bit, too. He's changed his style a little bit because you're not seeing all those crazy moves by AJ, and I think it also has to do with age. But when you take a look at, you know, Ricochet, I think, you know, it's whether the longevity, whether his body can sustain it, and he's going to have to tone it down.
Well, that's what we spoke to a lot when we've spoken to talent before in terms of this is the day and age where I think people have the mindset where maybe back in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, it was about continually doing it till your body develops like a callus form where it's just used to it to an extent. Now it's all about training smarter, not necessarily harder, especially as you get older. Not that they can't do it. Not to say that a guy, for example, like AJ Styles can't do what he normally did 20 years ago. It's you leave them wanting more because when you're telling the story, you don't want to give them everything at once. You and I have talked about this new kind of evolution of wrestling where everybody's doing these dives and moves and things of that nature. I think you do that to an extent to get attention, but once you have that attention and now you're in the position that Ricochet is in, you're right. It's about finding that balance. And I think he'll have no problem finding that balance. My biggest thing is, you know, he'll have the tools, he'll have the brains, he'll have the mindsets to help him get his character over more in terms of a person because, hey, we know who Ricochet is as a professional wrestler. My biggest concern when it came to guys like, for example, like Roderick Strong is a perfect example, or Ember Moon we've covered and talked about NXT. Who are these people internally? Who is the person behind Ricochet? That's what I'm more interested in, and that's what I want to see him progress as he's in NXT and most likely will eventually end up on the main roster.
One of the biggest tag teams, literally and figuratively, to join WWE, and that is War Machine.
You're my War Machine. Sorry,
like Hanson Smith and Rey Monroe, of course. Monroe, who is engaged to, I think, Sarah Logan, I believe, they finished up their duties with Ring of Honor and with New Japan, so now they are heading in there. You know, there's just a bunch of tag teams right now, and, you know, they have that look kind of a sanity. Wyatt family type of feel. So they're going to have to differentiate themselves, but there's no question this is one of the most talented tag teams in the world is now. Well, not property, but they belong to now the Performance Center. So it's going to be great.
Well, if you see their t-shirt, they're property of the Performance Center now. So there's no question about that, Jeff. But you're right. I mean, if you had spoken about War Machine, I could only go by what I saw in terms of videos, catching them on YouTube, and just seeing things they've done across the United States and across the world in terms like of places like Japan. But now that I've had a chance to see them, although it was only one match, to see them live and perform.
Left an impression
when we saw them at Ring of Honor Final Battle. They definitely have a presence and aura about them. And I think that's going to help them tremendously because nowadays when you're signed by WWE, your biggest thing, like guys like Ricochet and War Machine, you need that presence. That's that uncanny charisma that you can say without words, and I think War Machine has it.
And then, of course, on the female side, something that was kind of expected, but, you know, very happy for Candice LeRae. She is now heading to the Performance Center. Of course, her husband is Johnny Wrestling, Johnny Gargano. Of course, everyone knows her from her tag team, the Joy Ryan. Somebody that, you know, long overdue and kind of happy for. You saw her in the Mae Young Classic. You saw a glimpse of what she can do. Definitely going to help, I guess, add more depth that wins roster, because if there's going to be more call-ups, say for the Royal Rumble, you're going to want to have more females. And I think this is someone who's outstanding, still in her prime, 32, and looking forward to see what she can do in NXT.
Well, the great thing about Candice is that she feels, and we got a glimpse of her in the Mae Young Classic, just feels very relatable. It's easy to cheer for someone here. Crowd relates, crowd reacts to her. We've known what she's done with Joy Ryan and that great tag team now that has separated itself. But I think ultimately, like you're right, it's about developing depth. Not to say that she can't be a star on her own in the main roster, but I think right now what you're talking about, WrestleMania season is right around the corner. We're going to be talking about the Royal Rumble before you know it, and that'll be over, and there'll be WrestleMania full blast all the way. There'll still be a few pay-per-views before then, but it's all about replenishing that roster, and I think right now with the talent you've seen in the Mae Young Classic, especially Candice, future looks bright for that women's division.
You know, you talk about the Royal Rumble and just everyone called up and replenishing. I think this is going to be the most ever in the Royal Rumble match of employees working in one night as far as like wrestlers. So that's going to be interesting. It's crazy. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And when you take a look at the plethora of riches now in WWE's arsenal, where you can pull out a Ricochet, a War Machine, Candice LeRae, it's just amazing time for the WWE. You wonder, how can you fit all these people, you know? But NXT should be able to thrive now with such skilled athletes like the ones that are coming in now.
Jefe, what is a plethora?
A plethora?
Because I would hate that a co-host on the show would say there's a plethora of riches on the WWE roster, and that person does not know what a plethora is. So, Jeff, tell me, what is a plethora?
Trendsetter, could it be that it's just the weather's just so bad out there and snowing all the time that you're taking out your grumpiness and taking it out on me?
See, but you're right.
Yeah, this weather is killer, man.
It's killer. It's so depressing. Man. I mean,
and you know, we talk about Orlando. It's no better there. It's like 30, 40 degrees there, and like it was snowing in Florida too.
But it's Orlando.
Yeah, I guess. Disneyland is right next door.
Exactly. So. Who cares if it's 30 degree weather? But you're right in terms of that. If there's no question that WWE can afford it in their pocketbooks, and who wouldn't want to go? Even if you're not spending a tremendous amount of money to bring in this talent, like we just mentioned, the new signees to NXT, and they'll be at the Performance Center. Before you know it, we'll see them on NXT television. My main concern is from the talent perspective, Jeff. It's great. It's nice to have that notch in your belt and say, finally, I've made it to the WWE Performance Center. And before you know it, I can make it to the main roster. It's an obtainable goal. I'm this close to it now. But when there's no space for you, or when you have so many of maybe the same people or
talent skill,
it becomes really difficult to stand yourself out, and you can get lost in the shuffle. That's what I would be fearful as a talent. So in this sense, I hope these guys are used the right way, which we always say.
I think it's timing too. I think being
a lot of
Ricochet, he's probably thinking, this is the best time ever. I'm 29. This is the peak. I think I can stand out.
Nice, 29.
It's 29. I like Marty, but you know, he probably is taking a chance, thinking, you know, this is probably the best time for me to do it. I'm not going to be the same guy at 31 because I'm just a high flyer. So, you know,
to that point, he's done so much in the business now that maybe this is the final thing. Like, it's either now or never, because he's already done a lot outside the WWE.
And surprisingly, Tessa Blanchard, who is all in for the September 1 show for, you know, the Cody and the Young Bucks, got surprisingly that she didn't sign. So it's a little...
it's a matter of time, in my opinion. Yeah. I think it's right now for... We were talking about, you don't want to get lost in the shuffle right now with the Women's Royal Rumble coming along and WrestleMania. Who knows, around that time, from even after WrestleMania, might be a good time for Tessa to get out there. But, you know, for me, if I was talking to Tessa, I'd be like, still stay on this path, keep gaining momentum. Because you know what? When you do get to WWE, eventually she will be, whether it be NXT first and the main roster, you want it to mean something. You
just want to make that name for yourself.
Yeah, you just don't want to be a participant in the Royal Rumble, get lost and lose your identity, basically.
Full steam ahead for Tessa Blanchard. She has a tremendous future whenever she decides to fully commit to NXT.
Ricochet, you lucky bastard.
And WWE. So we talk about the influx of
new
people.
Just now.
You are angry. I think it's the weather.
It's the weather,
it might be something else. Are you lonely?
Sorry, I was upset with Sarah Logan. Yes, I'm very lonely, Jeff. I am very lonely. Nobody loves me.
You talk about the influx of NXT. Talk about some of the impact superstars that are leaving that have said their goodbyes. EC3 said his goodbye at the last tapings. Bobby Lashley said his goodbye at the last tapings. You also had rumors of Rockstar Spud joining the 205 Live roster pretty soon. Chelsea Green has given her notice to Impact. She's leaving too. So a lot of these people, and a lot of rumors now with EC3, who's stopped taking bookings past the 28th of January, hint, hint, maybe a surprise entrant to the Royal Rumble. You don't know if his name is that big enough where the WWE audience would know. But talk about the influx of TNA Impact, of TNA, here you go, I made the mistake, of Impact wrestlers, you know, coming to the WWE or NXT.
Well, first of all, to talk about your last statement in terms of would people recognize them, I think now at this point, social media being so popular, of course you know. But of course, when you talk about Royal Rumble and you talk about WrestleMania, that's where the diehards really come out and see it. So if EC3 were to somehow miraculously show up at the Royal Rumble, I think
miraculously he's probably,
I'm being sarcastic, but I'm saying, like, people would recognize who he is and know who he is. Beyond that, you obviously, that takes time to develop a character and kind of reinvent yourself in a sense.
Does Bobby Lashley make sense for Brock Lesnar after Brock drops the title to Roman Reigns?
I think so. He's been talking about how he's wanted to face him in the Octagon. That kind of died down once Brock Lesnar retired again. So I think it makes more sense he's the only one that makes viable sense that could go competitively against Brock Lesnar. I mean, we're coming to scenarios now where we're running out of people to face Brock Lesnar. We have a triple threat match. Braun Strowman will always be there, but we're running out of guys for Brock Lesnar to fight. So, you know, Bobby Lashley makes sense. As for Impact talent coming to the WWE, like I said, it makes sense from a business standpoint. If the offer's there, if you have more opportunity or better, better avenues to pursue, definitely do it. But again, your biggest fear, my biggest fear would be from a talent is, okay, are they going to have a plan for me? Am I going to have an opportunity here to really showcase myself and not get lost because there's just so many more people vying for that spot and there are only so many spots available. So we're going to have a four-hour Raw?
Oh, God, hope not.
God, hope not. But it looks like that could be the sense of 4 or 5 hour Raw to use up all this talent that you have that you're not using. Well, you can use them for house shows or things of that nature. I don't know. But
just a lot of wrestlers, a lot of talent there.
It's exciting. It's also a huge, no pun intended, but it's a huge for Impact to kind of now, all right, these individuals are leaving. They are giving their notice. How do we move on as a company from here?
And you got to think that WWE is going to have some people let go. So it kind of is like the circle of life because for people coming in, there's going to be some people that are going to have to get let go. Maybe those are the future of Impact, the future of Ring of Honor, the future of New Japan. You never know because New Japan is going to be more interested in, you know, more people from the WWE to get released. So we'll see what we find out. It's like a full circle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
More people come in, more people go out. So it's going to be, again, just fascinating 2018.
It's an opportunity, basically. Yeah. Step up or step aside.
All right, so we got more news in the world of professional wrestling, but we got to get to Marty Elias because it is a great interview here talking about Raw 25, talking about GLOW, talking about Lucha Underground. Their tapings begin soon. You can follow him on Twitter at MartyElias1967. Before we get to the interview, it's time to talk about Collar and Elbow. Collar and Elbow is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing wrestling passion with street fashion, from cool-looking flex-fit caps to great-looking men and women's shirts. Check out the entire winter fashion line, including brand-new long-sleeve shirts and hoodies. You got to go to collarxelbowbrand.com and save 10% off your entire online purchase just by entering promo code HIGHSPOTPODCAST, all in caps. Get 2018 started off the right way. It's Collar and Elbow. And now, without further ado, here is our interview with the one and only Marty Elias. All right, Trendsetter, it's always great having Marty Elias on. It's been a while, man, but we're going to catch up. We're going to talk Raw 25. But of course, you can catch him on Lucha Underground. He is their senior official, as well as he is actually on the set of GLOW right now, recording for season 2. So we're going to talk about that as well. So without further ado, Marty Elias, what is going on, my man?
Like you said, you know, I just stepped out of the GLOW set. We're actually shooting a wrestling sequence for episode 10 right now. So I stepped out for that to come join you guys.
So talk about that real quick. You know, who would have thought, right, after the first season, it was something that was intriguing to everybody, and especially with the whole women's revolution or the women's evolution, whatever you want to call it, it's been a boom. And obviously, you know, you have GLOW coming out. Just your thoughts on the first season and to think that there's a season 2 now that's coming out soon. Did you ever think that this was something possible?
No, I am so blessed to be where I'm at, and I thank Chavo Guerrero for it because he's the one who got hired on first, and he got on as the wrestling coordinator, but they didn't have anybody to take care of their rings or help train with Chavo or whatever, so he suggested me to the executive producer, and they got a hold of me, and we negotiated, and I actually helped lead them to purchase their rings. I set up their rings, maintain them, dress them, and do all the other good stuff. I helped Chavo train the girls, but I never thought in a million years, you know, that I'd be working for such an awesome crew of people and such a great show. I mean, the success of the first season was just phenomenal, and the feedback has just been great. And I know people are dying to see season 2, and season 2 is going to be even better. I mean, it's just the twists and turns for season 2 are going to be a lot of fun, and you guys are going to be surprised with the season finale.
What I was surprised with, Marty, is, and you mentioned this when you were first on the show, that, you know, look for something pretty funny and comedical. And I was waiting for it, and you tweeted it out. I mean, I have to bring it up. When you were dressed up as a ref, and you were taking a photo with Joey Ryan, and you had that wig, that toupee looked absolutely amazing, I must say.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it was funny because they dolled me all up, and they shaved my goatee and beard off, and They gave me a mustache, darkened up everything, and then they gave me the wig. And it was great because I was walking on set and I was ripping people who were daily production people, who PAs who were on the set production, and I'd go steal their coffee or do whatever. And they were, you know, hey, what are you doing? You moron or whatever. And they found out it was me and they were like, oh my God, it doesn't even look like you. It's funny because I sent that photo to my wife and she texted me back. She goes, I hate that look. I like the way you are. So I was like, okay.
Well, that's a good woman you have there, but you owned it though. I must say that.
Yeah, it was great. You know, they asked me maybe, I think, 5 days before we were shooting that. And we said, hey, you know, we'd like you to be a real referee. We want to doll you up as a referee. And I said, sure. So, you know, they asked me specifically what an 80s referee was wearing. And I told them what it was. And, you know, they dolled me up and they picked out a wig for me. And it was great because our costume people and our makeup people, that's all them. You know, they do such a fabulous job with what they do, and they're awesome at taking that 80s look and making it happen today. And it was all them. It was all the magic, you know, that those people do on a daily basis.
Well, you mentioned before there's a lot of prepping because season one was kind of exciting, didn't know what to expect. Now we're in season two. Do you have a more of a level of comfort now in terms of being behind the scenes and being on camera now for GLOW?
Yeah, and you know, it's great. We have such a great crew here. One of the things that I found very fascinating that one of the producers told me is that normally on TV production shows, you know, that when you wrap a season, that if you're doing another season, you know, if it gets picked up, more times than not, you only have maybe 30%, you know, 40% of the crew coming back. GLOW for season two had 95% people come back. That's how awesome a crew we have and people. It's like a family environment. I mean, everybody is great. Everybody's striving to make it happen. And then after learning the success and how big GLOW got, I mean, of course, people are dying to get on this show. You know, Chavo and I have people, you know, calling us, texting us, shooting us emails. Hey, man, get me on the show. How can I get on the show? And we're like, well, we're blessed. We got lucky, I guess. And, you know, it's great because it's been embraced by not only Hollywood, it's been embraced by the wrestling community as well, and that's, you know, a win-win.
You've had guys like Joey Ryan on, Alex Riley's also had a role in there. What do you think's led to the success of GLOW? Do you think it's nostalgia? Do you think it's the women's revolution? What do you think has been the key for GLOW, you know, picking up so much steam, having a season two now?
I think it's all of the above, and I think, you know, Chavo and I had the conversation, and you know, GLOW had a built-in audience to begin with. So we grabbed that audience again and the wrestling community. But it has to do with the writing and, you know, the producers and the acting. You know, I mean, Allison Brie, Betty Gilpin, Mark Maron, and the rest of those girls are just amazing. And if it didn't have great writing, you know, the show wouldn't be where it's at. I mean, you got Jenji Cohn, who does Orange is the New Black, who did Weeds. I mean, she's the executive producer. And you got Liz Flavin and Carly Mensch, who are the writers. I mean, those guys are phenomenal at what they do, and their writing is great, and they are captivated by GLOW, and, you know, they went for it, and, you know, the success is, you know, where it's at because of that.
When we talk about GLOW, of course, you have iconic names as far as we're fans of GLOW, as like Hollywood Vine, and, of course, you know, we talk about Mount Fuji. Of course, the originator passes away, Emily Roll, I believe is her name, and just mm-hmm. think about the that character and how it was incorporated into GLOW, and just talk about just the importance of, like, I guess making that tradition, making, you know, that culture of what GLOW used to be, and just, you know, representing it now.
Yeah, you know, it's great. Like a lot of the original GLOW people are so behind this GLOW on Netflix, and what if you go back and you look at some of the photos and some of the characters that were a part of the original GLOW, you'll see a lot of comparisons and you'll see a lot of, you know, similarities as far as characters are concerned. Of course, they're not using the same name, but, you know, you can look at Azoya, you can look at, you know, Welfare Queen, you can look at, you know, Betty Gilpin, who's Liberty Bell. You know, you can see a lot of the similarities to some of those girls back then. And once again, it goes back to the writing team and the creative of Liz and Carly, you know, going back and doing their homework and wanting to get it right and incorporating some of that old school GLOW into, Netflix glow and just making it what it is and not, you know, settling for second best, you know. And that was great because I remember coming in the very first day and they were like, we're going to do this right and we're going to get it right. And I think they have.
Marty, you're going to be a busy guy all of a sudden now because you're taping Glow, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're going to be taping season 4 of Lucha Underground. Let's talk about all the talk and everyone saying, is it going to happen? Is it not? But just talk about how happy you are for a season 4 taping pretty soon for Lucha Underground.
I'm real excited, as are a lot of the roster and a lot of the talent. And I won't get into the specifics on why it took so long and all that, because that's all for another day. But I'm just happy to see that it's greenlit. We're going to be starting very soon. As a matter of fact, I sent some dates out to you guys.
Yep.
And which the dates haven't been announced yet, so that's why I'm just kind of kayfabing that. But I did send you guys the dates. But it's phenomenal. You know, I'm real happy because the fact that I'm going to get paid.
No,
that's always a good thing.
Yeah, it's always a good thing.
And, you know, it's going to be great to get back in the loop with Lucha Underground, you know, because you got Impact and all the stuff that's happened. Because if you really look at it realistically, the last time we taped Lucha Underground was in June of 2016. That was the last time that we've done anything Lucha Underground. I mean, as far as tapings. So it's going to be good to get back and knock out these 22 episodes. And just to have Lucha Underground back on the map, so to speak, you know, a part of, you know, the WWE game and a part of, you know, the Impact, a part of Ring of Honor. And, you know, we're going to be back in full swing again. And, you know, people are going to get their fill of Lucha Underground come 2018.
Marty, with that being said, is there any, I guess the right word wouldn't be fear, but any concern that the fact that it's taken so long for the tapings to happen, for everything to get done, that maybe there might be a fear there's a loss of momentum, or do you guys feel you guys can pick up right where you left off?
I think all of the above, but at the same time, I think with the writing of Chris Joseph, Chris Roach, and what they've done, I think that people are waiting for it and want it. Even though I'll be the first to admit it, we have lost some momentum, and there's some things that we could have done, you know, to keep that momentum. But unfortunately, those decisions and things are above my pay scale. And, you know, those are decisions that are being made for us, not with us. But I'm just happy, you know, that it's happening again. We get a season 4, and if, you know, we go beyond season 4, I think it's going to be a plus for everybody. But, you know, we're going to do season 4. We're going to knock it out of the park like we have in the first 3 seasons. And if season 5 happens, that's great. If it doesn't, that's cool too, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the wrestling world.
You have a lot of loyal fans that are actually clamoring for the return of Lucha Underground. And, of course, you guys want to be in the same verbiage of a Ring of Honor, of a WWE, of Impact. So you guys want to get your names back in the game. Talk about the fans of Lucha Underground. Do you think that the loyal fan will return to this, knowing that a season 5 is in question? Or how do you guys think you can recapture the fans that are kind of like, okay, well, you know, I'm not sure if there's going to be season 5, but I'll stick around to season 4. How do you get the fans back into watching Lucha?
Just posting and putting out there that we're back. I mean, I can't tell you how many text messages, how many emails and messages that I receive on social media with folks already clamoring for tickets. And, oh my God, it's so hard to get into Lucha Underground. And, oh, it's like, look, you know, I don't have that type of stroke, you know. I'm just a jobber referee, you know. That's all I am, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, and plus, you know, I've never needed a ticket to get into anywhere.
There you go. I mean, That's awesome when you can see that.
But no, you know, honestly, the fans are waiting for it. The fans want it, you know, and it's great because Lucha Underground does have a very loyal following. And I know that those people are clamoring and wanting Lucha Underground. So I think they'll be there. And I think there isn't going to be any shortage of people coming to the temple or trying to get into the temple for season 4.
You know, Marty, what's so exciting about it is that Jeff and I, while doing the show and speaking to you prior in the episode we had beforehand, you know, it seems like 2017 was such a huge boom in professional wrestling, social media being a definite plus and guide there for that boom. Now it feels like 2018, there's so much more excitement in the world of professional wrestling and things related to it. And Lucha Underground definitely fits in that sense of variety of things being out there. So do you feel now with season four and, you know, possibly season five, depending on how the reviews go and how much momentum you guys can pick up from where you last taped, what do you think in the sense of Lucha Underground, where it fits in the category of this huge boom and surge of professional wrestling in the year 2018?
I think we're right up in the top three. I really believe it, man. And because the product and the storytelling and the writing and everything is, you know, above and beyond what stuff's on TV today. And I'm not trying to, you know, throw stones at anybody, but I mean, look at the product. I mean, look at season one through season three. You know, we're going to be right back in that race. And I think it's, like you said, it's going to be exciting because you got Ring of Honor, you got WWE, and, you know, you got Impact doing what they're doing. But I think people want something different. I think, you know, with us being away, I think we did lose the momentum, like mentioned earlier, but I think at the same time, that wrestling audience, that base, especially the Lucha fans, you know, are wanting Lucha Underground. And I think us coming back, you know, that's going to be beneficial to us because there's going to be a wanting for it. Because a lot of times in life, you know, when you take something away from somebody, they want it that much more. So when they finally get it back, guess what? They appreciate it more. They're a lot more fanatical. So I think it's great. You know, everybody doing what they're doing, like the Young Bucks, for example, Kenny Omega, what they're doing, Cody. I mean, the Bullet Club using social media. I mean, Chris Jericho doing what he's doing. I mean, you know, it's just 2018 looks going to be the year of wrestling. I think it's going to be as equal to what it was at one point. And I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of different opportunities for a lot of different people.
That is an excellent point, Marty. You always want to leave them wanting more because we talk about the WWE being 365, you know, and sometimes just get oversaturation. But, you know, it is good to have like an off season or, you know, you can tell the fan, listen, we're leaving you in suspense and we'll get back at you, you know, in 6 months from now or a year from now. It's kind of good to leave them wanting more. And I think you make a great point that Lucha Underground does that. And it, you know, makes the excitement for when you guys come back even greater. You talked about, for example, the boom in wrestling. Just your thoughts on Wrestle Kingdom, Jericho, Omega, Alpha Omega. Did you, you know, catch that? Did you find that interesting? Did you find it as one of the can't miss events of the year so far?
Yeah, and the thing that just makes it special for me is the fact that I know Chris like a brother, and texting with him before that and texting with him after that, I mean, the guy is phenomenal. You know, like I told him, I go, you can write your own ticket, dude. You can really do whatever the hell you want to do, and he's doing it. And to see Chris Jericho go out and do that with Wrestle Kingdom and do what he did, and just get himself over like he always does. And, you know, the guy's always reinventing himself. And I tell young talent that all the time. Go out and critique and just tweak things of your character, you know, whether it be your style, your hair, your mannerisms, just whatever, you know. And Jericho does it all the time. I mean, he reinvents himself. I mean, it's like every single day the guy's doing something. He's such a smart businessman, too. But to see those types of guys, the Young Bucks, I mean, those guys are doing great with merch, Hot Topic, I mean, all that other great stuff. I mean, there's opportunities and possibilities now outside of WWE. And the thing, you know, that I like to see is that you don't necessarily need WWE to have a wrestling career anymore, you know, to make a living. I mean, it's great if you want to go there, and I suggest that everybody goes there because that's what the goal is, or that's what the goal was. But if you're able to provide for your family and you're able to make a living, then God bless you, man. Go out and, you know, join the Bullet Club or, you know, go out in social media and, you know, go pro wrestling tees and get your T-shirts and things of that nature, seminars. You know, it's just wide open in 2018.
Yeah, it does feel like it's wide open in 2018. Like we spoke about before, it just seems to be so much more variety with social media as the focal point being such a powerful tool. You don't necessarily, like you said, need the WWE to make a name for yourself. Look at guys like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks as perfect examples. But Marty, I mean, talking about Jericho and Kenny Omega, Wrestle Kingdom 12, which was an amazing match, a great build-up. Like you mentioned, Jericho's a genius and so is Kenny Omega.
The story was awesome.
To see two great wrestling minds work together and do all that stuff was amazing. The whole build-up was great. But talking about Chris Jericho, you know, being a smart businessman as he is, developing now this whole idea of the Jericho Cruise, rock and wrestling cruise, yeah. Raging Tool. We know you. We talk to wrestling about you, but you're a huge music connoisseur and fan as well. Could we expect to see you on the boat as well?
You know what? I've mentioned that to Chris, and I would like to be there. And it just depends on scheduling and where I'm at and what's going on. You know, right now, you know, things are wide open. And would I love to be in there? Yes, Chris, I'd like to be on there. But, you know, I get it. You know, it's a Ring of Honor thing. And I know that they have a very good referee in Todd St. Clair and some other fellows there. So, you know, I don't know. You know, we'll see. I know there's a lot of other people who are going to be on that. And it would be great to go on there and represent. But at the same time, you know, it just depends on scheduling and where we're at.
Yeah, you being a huge rock guy, you know, it's your kind of cruise, right? It would be your kind of cruise.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just go from a fan's perspective, you'd want to go.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, who's to say that I won't? You know, so just keeping that door open.
You nice. Better, Marty, you better let us know, man, because we will be there as fans. So you let us know, and we can do a little whatever happens on the boat happens on the boat. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
All right, Marty.
Oh, that's great.
All right, Marty. But one thing is Raw is celebrating their 25-year anniversary this coming Monday. And, you know, being a former WWE official and seeing a lot of stuff, because we talked to you last year about the whole Undertaker for Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. So you've been there. You've been at the biggest WrestleManias, you know. So just talk about Raw and talk about some of the memories that you'll take away from the 25 years of Raw.
Oh, God. I remember one of the cool ones that I did was Ric Flair versus Vince McMahon on a Monday Night Raw.
Oh, wow.
Which was very, very cool. I believe that was 2007. You know, doing that, I mean, you know, that was cool. You know, a little intimidating at first, but, you know, because it was Vince and, you know, you got to get it right and make sure, you know, that you're on point because, you know, you're working with the boss. You know, you're not working with anybody else. You're working with the man himself. So, you know, to be involved with a match with Vince on Raw was one of the highlights. Randy Orton versus Ric Flair in Tampa in April of 2007 was a real cool one, you know, doing that. Raw 15th anniversary, Bridgeport, Connecticut, being in the ring when the great Khali was attacking Swoggle and Hulk Hogan came out and made the save. You know, that was cool because, you know, in 2006, I had worked with Hulk and Randy at SummerSlam.
Wow.
And so, you know, those moments right there are very, very special to me. The stuff, you know, that we always did in L.A. was always cool because L.A. is my hometown and being able to do, you know, Monday Night Raw, you know, from L.A., from your hometown, and, you know, to have your parents there and, you know, your family and your wife and my daughter and stuff, you know, was always super special to me. And you know, it was great, you know, to do pay-per-views from the Staples Center and, you know, just do that. Even, you know, doing Monday Night Raw in Anaheim, which is right next to Disneyland, which I loved. And, you know, it was great, you know, to have those memories, you know, to work that stuff.
Any memories you might have as a fan when you weren't particularly working for the company at that time?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember, as a matter of fact, I was going through photos last week in storage, and I found a bunch of different photos of myself, you know, wearing WWE t-shirts, still do, and Lucha t-shirts, but WWF at the time. And, you know, taking photos of me, you know, at Monday Night Raw, standing in front of the ring, you know? In front of the barricade, you know, like I was that guy too, believe me. And, you know, finding photos of me from WrestleManias, you know, from WrestleMania 12, you know, going out, marking out at the hotel and getting pictures with people and things like that. I did that too. So if you do it, don't feel bad. You know, I respect you for it because I did it too.
No, of course, but is there one particular one, like, for example, Jeff and I talk about, you know, the Jericho, when Jericho debuted in 1999, that huge pyro interrupting The Rock, and that was such a huge moment as a wrestling fan, especially it was in Chicago, the crowd was so hot. Was there a particular one that stands in your mind? Because, you know, WWE did their top 10 review of
the
top 10 moments.
We want to ask you on that, too. We want to ask you about the top 10, but any moment were you like, wow, this is crazy, I can't believe I'm here? I know you said Rick and Vince, but anyone in particular, any other one?
Working Shawn and Kane was a very cool one because they actually had it was a rematch from one of the pay-per-views that they did. And that was a big thing for me, you know, to be working Monday Night Raw. And then my first time working Monday Night Raw with DX was phenomenal. You know, when DX reunited, you know, I was right there, you know, and working with them and the Spirit Squad, you know, I mean, that was awesome, you know, but just to hear that DX music hit and marking out and just going like, holy smokes, I'm really here. It was a very cool moment. The first time that I ever worked with DX on Raw was amazing.
Nice. Why do you believe that Raw has been able to, you know, withstand the test of time? 25 years, and you're 93 to now, and it's still going. Just what do you think has led to its longevity?
Vince McMahon. You know, if you never worked for the man, then you're never going to know how he works and what he does. The man is a machine. He is very, very, I want to say he's very motivated and very focused in what he does. And to see that man work and to see his work ethic and to see what he puts into it, I mean, you know, it's just amazing to see that man. You know, I've worked for a lot of people. I've worked for a lot of people, a lot of bosses, but that man is a machine, and, you know, he thrives on being successful. And, you know, you just can't help but say, hey, man, this is my boss, man. I'm going to work just as hard and just be just as good, because, you know, he sets that bar, and just working for him is amazing, you know. And it's great because, you know, like I've been able to work with WWE, work with Vince McMahon, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and those guys. But having that work ethic, a WWE wrestling work ethic, and taking it to a Lucha Underground, taking it to a Glow, I mean, it's like, wow, you know, like those are awesome. But, you know, the work ethic that you have in wrestling, WWE, it's like, you know, that just makes you even more successful in any other place you go. And that's why, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, that I've been able to be successful outside of WWE, you know, with Glow and Lucha Underground and other things that I've done, because of the work ethic that I had with WWE. It just made me a better person.
It shows how much it's rubbed off on you too. I mean, like you said, the work ethic, right? Because sometimes you're on set at Glow right now. Then you're doing Lucha tapings coming up. Then you're doing also seminars with Chavo. We'll get into that in a little bit too. So you're working too. You got that Vince McMahon work ethic in you. And sometimes when the trendsetter and I are kind of tired, we're like, what would Vince McMahon be doing right now? He'd be probably awake, you know, thinking about next week's show.
No, well, I usually say, what would Jericho be doing?
Yeah, those are the two ones that we do. It's either if I'm tired or start yawning, I'm like, wait a minute, Vince wouldn't, you know, yawn or feel sleepy. Neither would Jericho. Jericho's probably planning his next, you know, promotion or something else in the works. So, yeah, man, the work ethic is something that if you took anything out of your time in WWE is wow, these guys have amazing work ethic.
Yeah, it's always on the hustle. I mean, and I'm 24/7. I'm hustling. You know, I'm on my phone constantly. And a lot of people, oh, you're texting. You're just, no, I'm not. I'm hustling. I'm networking. I'm the biggest networking guy you're ever going to meet. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it be with T-shirt companies, with just, you know, endorsements, or just, you know, networking people, you know, talking to people, you know, seminars. Hey, you know, you want to book me? You know, we'll get into that later too. But it's just, I'm always on the hustle, you know, just always just trying to find that next gig, you know, because to be realistic, you know, I'm not a 9-to-5 guy. I'm not. You know, I wasn't built to be a 9-to-5 guy. And I hate 9-to-5. You know, I've done 9-to-5. And to me, like my dad taught me, 9-to-5 is for suckers.
Wise man, Marty. Yes. Wise man.
Very wise words from a wise man.
All right, so Marty, you're going to play along here. I want to get your thoughts. Raw revealed its top 10 list. I know they had 25 moments, but we're going to narrow it down to the top 10 that we watched last night. And so we just want to get your thoughts on the top 10 and just maybe, you know, want to delve into what you think, whether it should have been in the top 10 or it shouldn't have been. So we'll start off with number 10. It was Cena being the number one draft pick in 2005. Jericho had the highlight reel and he presented Raw's number one pick, and it was John Cena. Just your thoughts on the number 10 memory, the moment for Raw.
Cena, you know, back then when Cena was up and coming and really just starting to get hot, I think it was a big deal, especially it being with Jericho. You know, it just made it that much more special. And I think Cena at that time was just coming into his own. And, you know, it meant something. you know, because at that time, like I said, you know, John was just coming into his own, and to quote Canyon, who better than to have Cena as the number one pick at that time?
Yeah, and Jericho obviously wanted to work with him because it kind of led to a program between the two. So, you know, what better way to get Cena involved into Raw than have him go up against Jericho? And Jericho's willing to do the job, too.
Yeah. And then what a great rub for him, too.
Well, definitely. So you go to the number... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marty.
Go ahead. No, and what I was just going to say real quick is getting a rub with Jericho, I mean, it's great because Jericho can work with any and get him over. And give him the rub, but at the same time, Jericho doesn't need a title to be over.
No, you're right. He doesn't need a title because, you know, it's just his resume, his work ethic as well, and what he's done in the business that, you know, just by working with him, regardless of wins and losses, we realize in professional wrestling are meaningless. Just working with the guy, you end up becoming a better for it.
We just made another shirt. We just made another shirt for Jericho. The rub of Jericho.
Rub it in, man. But I digress because Jeff loves talking about Jericho, and so do I. But we move to the number nine moment of the top ten. That's Mick Foley winning the WWF Championship at that time. Huge ovation. Stone Cold Steve Austin coming and hitting the Rock with a chair. One of the biggest pops I've yet to witness in real life of Stone Cold Steve Austin. The whole corporation, DX, huge chaos, and Mick Foley walks out WWE champion. Do you agree? Number nine. What do you recall from those moments that when you saw that happen?
I honestly think they should have gave the title to Mick at a pay per view instead of Raw. I just think it would have meant more.
Yeah, and that
just my opinion on it, because Mick was such a great worker and storyteller, and you know he could do anything, and I just felt that it just cheapened his title reign. You know, because Mick deserves, you know, to win a title on a pay-per-view. That's just my humble opinion.
And that led to
Shivani. I wasn't booking it, but that's just my humble opinion.
Yeah, and that led to Shivani saying when they were giving away the episode on Nitro, saying that
yeah.
Butts in the seats. But who knew that actually would do so, you know?
It'd work against them, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's the plus that came out of that, but had they done it on a pay-per-view, Shivani would have never had that opportunity to do that and kill it.
We go to number eight, and probably one of the main reasons why you're on set right now. We'll talk about the probably beginning stages of the Women's Revolution. Trish and Lita main eventing on a Monday Night Raw. Just talk about that whole situation, trusting Trish and Lita, finally giving them the chance to main event a Raw.
I think that was great, and for me, that was just the beginning of this whole Women's Revolution, Divas, excuse me, startup, and showing that girls could really work, women could really work, and to have them main event, I think it proved the point, and it just showed the world that, hey, you know what? These female competitors can go too.
Definitely, they could go, and you know they closed the show basically on Raw that night. Number seven here, The Shield, Plan B, Seth Rollins turning his back on his brothers. That was such a historic moment in terms of the emergence of Seth Rollins as a singles competitor. What were your thoughts when you saw that happen?
Well, actually, you know what? And I'm going to be perfectly honest. When I was released from WWE, I stopped watching their product altogether. I didn't start watching WWE television again until 2014, 2015, when I got back in with Lucha Underground to start seeing what wrestling was doing, because I was over wrestling. So to be honest with you, I didn't watch much WWE, and I was never a fan of The Shield. So, I mean, I'm just being honest.
Oh, no, that's fine. So so when they mentioned The Shield as one of the top factions in wrestling history, so you're going to be a nay on that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, you want to talk factions to me, talk Four Horsemen, talk DX, talk NWO. Yeah.
So number six, so probably you were watching here at the time. Number six, of course, last year we talked about The Undertaker. It could have been his final WrestleMania when he lost to Roman Reigns. The reaction Roman Reigns got that next day on Monday Night Raw, where he was basically booed out of the building, and all he said was probably his best promo of recent memory is It's My Yard Now. So,
best promo of his career.
So your thoughts on that being number six? I think it's way too high. I don't even think it should have been a top 10 moment. But, you know, it's Roman Reigns, and he's a lightning rod, and that's Vince's guy. So what do you think? Six is too high?
I think, humbly, that it shouldn't even have been in the top 20.
Yeah.
And I think that instead of him coming out and saying it's my yard, he just should have came out and stood there and not said a word. I think he would have got more heat for it.
Definitely. I mean, I don't know how much more heat Roman Reigns can get nowadays, but you're definitely right. If he had said nothing and just walked off, they would have booed him, would have been perfect as well. Mm-hmm. So that would have been great booking as well.
Exactly.
So number five, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm sorry, you're saying, Marty?
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish your thought. You're going to add something to it.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold Steve Austin gives Vince McMahon his first stunner on live TV. Stuns the boss. We live vicariously through Stone Cold Steve Austin because I'm sure we all want to do that to our bosses to some point, even now to this day. But, of course, that wouldn't be politically correct to do that. But your thoughts on that when Stone Cold Steve Austin stunned Vince McMahon for the first time and he did a little weird little twitch in the ring for some reason. And it was kind of the beginning of that huge, huge rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin. This is well past Austin 316.
First off, it was probably one of the worst stunners ever.
Yes.
Because the way Vince took it. But it was the beginning of the whole McMahon-Austin era, which was just shocking in itself that Stone Cold put his hands on his boss. And that really just, I think, started turning the tide towards what WWE would eventually do during that time. And, you know, it was amazing. And if you were there watching Monday Night Raw back then you were treated to some great stuff, you know. And if you missed it, go back and watch it.
Yeah, free plug there for the network.
It happened at MSG, yeah, of course, too. So again, it did start the whole Austin McMahon feud. But I mean, honestly, who wouldn't love to do that to their boss in a while? It's awesome. We go to number four.
Yeah.
Oh, a guy we've talked about a lot here on the show. Y2J makes his debut, and what a bigger way than to interrupt The Rock in his promo and just have two guys that have the gift of gab, there. Of course, the whole Millennium Clock in Chicago, Illinois. I mean, his debut for Jericho. Just your thoughts on that whole Jericho debut at number four.
That was phenomenal. I mean, you know, to bring him in like that with The Rock and to have those two, like you said, the gift of gab, but the chemistry those guys had together too was just off the hook, man. So that was great. And of course, I've been a Jericho fan forever. I remember seeing him in Mexico, seeing him and stuff in Japan and then in WCW. And then when he appeared on Raw, it was like, holy smokes, he's finally here, you know, because of course, at that time, those guys weren't doing anything with the Jerichos, Benoits, Guerreros, and things of that nature. So to see Jericho appear on Monday Night Raw was just off the hook.
Yes, definitely an amazing moment. One that was, for me, on my list, number one, because you couldn't have gotten a better intro or entrance to a company than that. So he's definitely lived off that and has done great for himself right now as we continually always talk about Chris Jericho and reinventing himself. Going on to number three, you know, there's no question about, you know, us as fans always loving the underdog, and Daniel Bryan represents the underdog better than anybody. And so there was a situation prior to WrestleMania 30 where all the Yes Movement hijack Raw, where Daniel Bryan finally gets his match with Triple H at WrestleMania 30. Your thoughts on basically just the booking and the influence Daniel Bryan's had to the point that he's not wrestling now. There have been rumors that he might come back. Who knows? But Daniel Bryan's rise at that point of his career, it seemed like more organic than anything we've seen before in the last, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, I think the booking for that was great. I mean, as far as, you know, the movement coming in and doing that, I really didn't agree with the booking at WrestleMania, the way they beat the crap out of him. I think they really should have just let him go over the right way instead of just really just beating the crap out of him and just making him go through that whole thing. I get the underdog story and everything, but you already had the people. You didn't have to give Daniel any more sympathy. He already had it. So by beating him like that, I just think he just, you know, killed everything. If it was me personally, the following Monday after WrestleMania, I wouldn't have had him wrestle. But he defended the title afterwards because they beat him so bad, I'd have just had him cut a promo. said he's too beat up to work, but that's just me. So,
do you think Daniel Bryan?
And comes, I love the guy.
Do you think Daniel Bryan comes back?
I'd love to see him come back to Lucha Underground. Hello.
Hey, you never know, right? You never know. He'd be a free agent.
Marty's always hustling, man. Oh, I love this guy.
Always booking, always trying to get, you know, somebody. Hey, you never know, though. You could see him in Lucha. You never know. How about number two now? You said you kind of weren't watching around this time, but it's kind of famous if you could have missed the pipe bomb by CM Punk. Now, it's surprisingly that WWE even acknowledged CM Punk in this top 10, but maybe the fans voted and WWE couldn't do anything about it. But a little surprise at number two, CM Punk and his pipe bomb. Just your thoughts, if you hadn't seen it or not, but just your thoughts on CM Punk in general. And do you think he's actually left the business for good?
Who?
CM
Phil
Punk.
Phil Brooks.
I have a great story that I'll say for another day about Phil Brooks, but that's okay. Next, number one.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
Number one is Stone Cold Steve Austin dousing Vince McMahon, Shane McMahon, and The Rock with a beer truck. Beer all over the place. Vince McMahon swimming in a pool of beer. Just hilarious. Obviously setting up the main event match at WrestleMania between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Laughing. He had everything you wanted. At being number one on our list here, or at least for the WWE. What were your thoughts on the beer bath Stone Cold Steve Austin gave to Vince McMahon?
It was amazing. It's timeless. It was way ahead of its time. And going back to what I said earlier about Vince McMahon being the machine, being who he is, and just the genius of Vince McMahon, and a lot of people don't pick up on this, but it just has always told me on how much of a genius that man is. Through all that thing, when he was spraying them all down, and they were all beer and all this and everything, the greatest thing that Vince McMahon did is he started swimming.
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. It's awesome.
That's what you remember the most. He just did that. He started swimming in the beer.
Yes. And that's just the genius of Vince McMahon. You know, and little things like that, I mean, here it is, what, 20 years later, 25 years later? Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're still talking about it.
You think it's Vince's timing? Do you think he really planned on doing that? Or you think it's just spontaneous what he does? Or do you think he had planned that out? Or do you think he's just spontaneous that way? He just got a mind for the
spontaneous.
Business. Yeah, spontaneous.
Spontaneous, man. He knows the audience, and he just knows. I mean, the guy is a genius. I mean, he's a marketing genius. He's a booking genius. I mean, he's Vince McMahon. You know, and stuff like that just comes spontaneous because he feeds off of that crowd. And that's the thing that a lot of people miss, just feeding off the crowd and just thinking like that off, you know, just spontaneous like that and just doing something. And we're talking about it 20 years later.
Do you give any, how much percentage of credit would you give Vince Russo?
Vince Russo?
Yeah.
I think, God, you know, I've met Vince Russo once, and I know he takes a lot of credit for stuff, but, you know, if he was there writing the stuff, I mean, you know, that's great. But, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, Vince Russo was there, and he wrote for the Attitude Era, but WWE is still functioning without him and doing very well. So, you know, he probably had a little bit to do with it. I wouldn't give him full credit. Because you need to give the credit to the talent, because those are the guys and girls who go out and execute the stuff. But, you know, if he wrote it, I mean, that's great. But, you know, WWE is still WWE without him.
Marty, what do you think about the people that always come out? And you always have people that complain and whine about stuff. We understand that about how you mentioned before how Vince, you know, his ability to gauge the crowd and the audience. What would you say to those people who think, you know, well, Vince, you know, he's too old now. He doesn't understand what the wrestling audience wants nowadays type of scenario. You obviously working for the company, knowing Vince, see how he works. What would you say to those comments that people make that Vince is completely out of touch now with professional wrestling?
I would say this: if you had the ability and if you're so smart, you would be where Vince is at, but you're not. So the conglomerate publicly traded machine is still rolling and it's still, you know, doing great business. So you can armchair book all you want, But if you're not in the fire and you're not doing it every day, then I think you should just take a back seat and enjoy the ride.
Perfectly said. Sometimes I think it's the easiest thing to say, oh, it's easy to critique something, but sometimes just sit back and enjoy it. Stop worrying so much about this or that or plan A or plan B or plan C. Just go back and enjoy it like we did as fans. But everybody's so critical nowadays, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah, and you know what gets me is you have these, and I'm not bashing journalists, internet journalists or people, things of that nature, mm-hmm. who have never taken a bump, who give their stars and quarter stars and this and that and everything. When the guy's never jumped in a ring, he's never taken a bump, he's never run the ropes, he's never promoted, he's never booked, given their critiques, I get it. But at the same time, it's like, if you've never done it, how can you be critical of it? How can you have an opinion of it? And that's just the old school guy in me. I accept it today. 20 years ago, I didn't, you know, but it's laughable today with people, you know, who give their uneducated opinion on certain things. And it goes back to, if you've never been in the fire, then you don't know what it is to get burned.
All right, we're talking to Marty Elias, from senior official for Lucha Underground, starring for GLOW, and of course he's also a former WWE referee, and of course he does seminars. Talk about your seminars real quick. Talk about, you know, what exactly you and Chavo are actually are open for 2018 to do seminars for wrestling. So just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I've done a few seminars, and I actually had the privilege of doing a seminar with Dr. Tom Pritchard, who's the greatest trainer ever. And I've done some, and I had some success with a few that I did. But Chavo and I, you know, of course, working very closely the last 4 or 5 years, said, hey, you know what? You know, there's a lot of wrestling seminars being conducted by people who shouldn't be conducting seminars.
Mm, very true.
And we said, you know what? You and I have knowledge. We've been to the show. You know, we've done some pretty good things. I mean, if you look at our resumes, we've done some pretty cool stuff. We've been doing it long enough, and you know, we've had some success. You know, why not have? You know, why not do it? So, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to teach people how to work. You know, how to sell. You know, what it really means to work and how to get on TV and how to work TV. Unfortunately, a lot of people today who were training, coming into business, no fault of their own, just don't learn how to work TV because the people who were training them have never been on TV themselves. You know, so it's like, how can you teach somebody how to cook when you've never been in the kitchen?
That's
going to be the basis of what Chavo and I are going to be, you know, teaching. It's a matter of working, learning how to gauge a crowd, learning how to sell, learning how to work with a referee, you know, learning how to take time cues. You know, so it's a combination of all these different things. You know, God bless guys today who are going out and doing Cirque du Soleil and not selling. It's just, you know, that's where the business is at today. You know, and it's funny because I think today that a lot of the old school stuff is new school stuff, because a lot of people are going back and going like, hey man, that was pretty cool, because nobody's doing the old school matches. You know, they're doing all the flippity doodah and everything else. And, you know, when they see a match that comes down and, you know, people are going, whoa, what's this? This is different. You know, the guy's not doing 5 backflips and not selling. You know, they're actually grabbing a hold. You're telling a story, you know, oh my God, that guy got poked in the eye and he's selling it. Oh my God, he's still holding his eye. Guess what? Oh, that's right. Cause he got poked in the eye 10 minutes ago. You know what I mean? So that's what Chavo and I are really looking to educate people on, you know, is how to do it the right way.
When you talk about doing things the right way, Marty, and I couldn't agree with you more when you talk about things of what's going on in terms of, you know, the style of wrestling has kind of changed. I kind of feel it's kind of an evolution, but I also feel that from a fan's perspective, because I wouldn't know anything about the business, so I don't want to assume that I do, but it kind of feels like it's a circle. It always comes back around, and like we spoke about before, all those things like poking somebody in the eye and selling it are things that are, you know, considered old school nowadays, but it might be coming back and have been used pretty much in a lot of independent promotions out there. But, you know, when you go to when these seminars are done, and this is the one you and Chava are going to do, we've spoke to certain talent, and they've always said, you know, the main question I get asked all the time is, how do you make it? How would you answer that question in terms of somebody comes up to you saying, I'm somebody, I know I can't physically be in the ring, I'm not going to be a WWE superstar, but I know I can, I want to be a part of the business, I want to be a good referee, but I don't want to be a good referee, I want to be a great referee. And how do I make it there?
Yeah, so you want to be Marty Elias.
Yeah, exactly. I want to live up to that. I know I can never do it, but I want to get as close as I possibly can to it. What advice and tips would you give somebody like that? Because we've been on the roads a lot of times, and we've seen certain referees, and you know, some of them just stand there and they don't move around. And we're like, I wonder what Marty would say to this guy. What would your advice be for somebody like that?
Well, first off, I'd tell him to, you know, go get educated and get out of the wrestling business in general. No, I'm joking.
That's it, folks. That's his big advice.
All right, Marty Elias, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you now. We'll see you on the cruise. Hey,
thank you, guys. It was fun. No, when people hit me up, I tell them this. I said, look, if you're passionate about something, if you're passionate about being a referee, if you're passionate about being a wrestler, if you're passionate about being a ring announcer, a valet, a manager, then you need to give your all to that, you know, and you need to put binders on. And I tell them my experience, I was the squeaky wheel. What I mean by that, of course, going back to the hustle, I, 365, 24/7, I was living, breathing, eating, wrestling. Yeah, I made wrestling my life. And unfortunately, my wife and daughter at one point, you know, and this was a stupidity, but this is how focused I was, and this is what it takes to make it. Do I suggest it to people? No, but this is what I did. I was consumed by wrestling, and nothing was going to stop me from doing what I wanted to do. People thought I was crazy. People said, you know, you never make it. You're a referee. I said, no. I said, I'm going to make it. But what I did is I just consumed myself, and I watched, and I asked questions, and I was humble. And I worked, I trained, and I didn't stop. You know, if I worked with a certain talent, I would, you know, then, you know, thank them. And if somebody critiqued me, you know, they critiqued me. If nobody critiqued me, then I was doing okay. And I would just look at Tim White. I would look at Tommy Young. I would look at Mike Chioda. I would look at what was on TV and going, you know what? I can do that. And see where they were at positioning-wise and everything. And really just kind of taught myself. But I did have Jesse Hernandez, who brought me into the business. And, you know, he did teach me some things. But I was passionate about what I wanted to do. And I wasn't going to let anybody tell me no. But if you're passionate about it and this is what you want to do, then you need to live it and breathe it. And be smart about it and be your own biggest cheerleader, you know, like be your own cheerleader, you know, because you promoting yourself is just going to, you know, put yourself out there, you know, because I believe that I'm the best. I believe that I'm the greatest. And it's not an attitude thing. It's not an ego thing. It's just this thing, because if I don't believe it, nobody else is going to believe it. So why do they want to hire me?
Hey, that's great advice, Marty. Obviously, you are on the Mount Rushmore of referees. I have Earl Hebner, Tim White, Marty Elias, and Charles Robinson are on my Mount Rushmore.
They're on your Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
It's an elite group, my friend.
It is.
Wow.
Marty, look, even the man is at a loss for words. See, yes. This is what I do.
You've left the master hustler speechless right now.
All right, listen, Marty Elias, thank you so much. I appreciate all your time. You can see him on GLOW Season 2. Catch up on Season 1 on Netflix. You can see Lucha Underground coming soon to a television set near you. The tapings are set to begin pretty soon. Of course, former WWE official. The man does seminars. He'll teach you how to be the best referee you can be. I mean, is there anything that you don't do?
Birthday parties and bar mitzvahs.
That too? Oh my God, man!
I do that. Hey, look, if I'm getting paid for it, I'm going to do it.
Listen, Marty, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. I know you were on set, so the time that you gave us. Thanks for talking about Raw 25 and everything that's going on with Lucha and GLOW.
Also, will we have a chance to see you at WrestleCon in New Orleans?
Here's the thing. I would love to go there. I plan to go out there, but here's the thing. Hey, promoters, you want a great referee? Book me. You know, it's unfortunate today's promoters, unfortunately, aren't booking great referees or good referees. You know, I get it. It's a budget thing. But if you expect a five-star match out of talent that you're bringing in, you're only going to get a two-star match because more times than not, a lot of those guys don't trust a referee for a spot, or they just don't want to work with a green referee. It's no fault of his own, but if he's never been on TV and never learned how to work, then how is he going to the match? So I'd love to be there. You know, it's up to the promoters to bring me in. You know, I'm not a hard ass, or I'm not expensive. I'm very willing to negotiate and do my thing, but, you know, your promoters are wanting Marty Elias. They can catch me at on Instagram at Marty Elias 67, Twitter at Marty Elias 1967, on Facebook, Marty Elias. And then with me and Chava doing the seminars, you can get more information by shooting an email to bookgeseminar@gmail.com.
Hey, Marty, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. And hope to talk to you in the future, man. Actually, hope to catch you out there for one of the Lucha tapings. So we'll talk about that too later on. And maybe in private, we can get that Phil Brooks story.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Marty. Thanks a lot, right, man. Guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, awesome interview once again with Marty Elias. Love having him on. Who knows? Maybe we'll be able to get on the Jericho Cruise, all three of us, and have a ball.
That would be awesome.
It really would be, right? But again,
just to talk to Marty. I mean, talking to Marty is...
his knowledge is awesome.
Not just the knowledge, but it's just he's such a cool guy, and it's so easy to talk to him about anything. And I can't wait to hear that story about CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks, from Marty at another time that's appropriate. But just a great interview. Just has so much in-depth into the business that it's like... It's just free-flowing. It comes out. You can't stop it. But again, it's so grateful to talk to him and so gracious that he gave us more than a few minutes of his time on the set of GLOW and stepped aside specifically just to speak to us. So thank you so much, Marty. We greatly appreciate it.
And again, Lucha Underground begins their tapings soon. You'll find it eventually everywhere on social media what dates they are. We do know, but of course, you'll have to find out, just like all you Lucha Underground fans, when the tapings begin. So you can head over to the temple and watch the stars of Lucha Underground do their thing. So thank you, Marty Elias. We'll hope to talk to you soon. But now we're going to continue with some more wrestling news. The Curb Stomp seems to be back.
Oh, my God. You and I saw it.
And it made its return this past Monday night. What do you think? Is it here for good? Are we done with the pedigree? So welcome to see the Curb Stomp come back.
Oh, and you look at it, we haven't really seen the pedigree anymore. He's been doing a variation of moves that you thought were, you know, a finish. He was doing something similar to the Rainmaker that Okada uses, with a kind of a rotating, you know, bringing you in clothesline type of thing. So yeah, I think the Curb Stomp's here. But what a way to bring it out in an amazing match with Finn Balor. Which these two guys have great chemistry with each other, and to see that and then come out of nowhere, I think the audience was shocked. You and I definitely on TV were shocked. When I saw it, you kind of had a delayed reaction in your face, and I was like, was that just a Curb Stomp?
I had to do like a double take. I was like, what?
But again, it just makes you realize too, Jeff, that you never say never in this business. As much as that cliche is used a lot, we never thought we'd ever see the Curb Stomp. When Vince has an idea in his head, he's set that way. If somebody convinced them, or he said maybe this is the right time to bring it back out, there's always a possibility. And to have that back, I think, as ridiculous as it sounds, I think is the best thing for Seth Rollins, because whenever
it defines him, kind of.
It defines him a little bit. Whenever he did that, that defined his character. When he does the pedigree, did anything else, it just didn't seem right. So maybe now we'll finally see the real Seth Rollins, Jeff. May the real Seth Rollins please stand up or give me a Curb Stomp, whichever one.
He's kind of been in limbo since, you know, Roman Reigns and Braun and Brock. And he's just been in limbo with the tag team title, so hopefully this is the beginning of a kind of rejuvenation for Seth Rollins. But, you know, talk about wishing tremendous congratulations, and that is for Bobby Roode becoming the United States champion, defeating Jinder Mahal. Kind of surprising, because I thought once he was playing that rib injury, I thought for sure that Jinder was going to take advantage and become the new U.S. champion. But they go to Bobby Roode as a new champ. Just your thoughts real quick on Bobby Roode as your new United States champion. I guess maybe one word.
Well, it was definitely glorious. Let's make the United States Championship glorious again, Jeff. That's a t-shirt right there, free for you, Bobby. Don't worry about it. You'll pay it to me forward another way. But maybe I'll take a chapter out of Marty Elias' book, Jeff, where when it came to that rib injury that you were talking about, something about it just didn't sit well with me. I mean, why do you have to sell the fact that Bobby Roode has a rib injury? Do we have to give him that type of sympathy where he's an underdog going against somebody like Jinder Mahal? Why do you have to play that injured angle? Why
couldn't he just... excuse for Jinder, I guess, if he were to lose, but he didn't. He won.
He won. And the, you know, the
it just didn't make sense in terms of the injury. I'm happy for Bobby Roode. It still doesn't feel right to me to see him as a face. I think he's doing a very good job of what he's doing. The crowd obviously loves him. They love that music. But to me, he just sits well with me. Kind of like with Seth Rollins. He's just, to me, better as a heel. Because you might hate him, but you'll love to cheer him. So congratulations to Bobby Roode getting his first championship in the WWE main roster. Obviously, he was a former NXT champion. So I can't wait to see what happens. Hopefully, with a guy like Bobby Roode and his knowledge of the business and the years he's been in it, hopefully he can bring some prestige back to a title that hasn't been the same since John Cena did the whole U.S. Open Challenge.
Well, I mean, AJ Styles brought some prestige a little bit, don't you think? I think
Jeff, I don't know about you, but it kind of felt like he was just holding the title. He was trying to make it prestigious, and he's having some great rivalries with Kevin Owens. But I think after a certain scenario when they kind of felt the Jinder Mahal experiment had failed and ceased to be anything profitable, I think in their mind, again, this is my perspective on stuff, I think they said, you know what, we need AJ now to become the champion again. He'll carry that title just as well as he carries the U.S. title. So then from there, it kind of lost its momentum, in my opinion.
A couple of things before we wrap up, and I maybe thought about leading up with this as far as when we opened the show, but just because there's like unconfirmed reports, and then because Paige kind of said that she was out of the Rumble, but she kind of tweeted that 2018 will be her year. So you don't know if it's definite. WWE hasn't addressed it fully yet. The rumors of Paige having to retire because she won't be cleared because of the neck injury that she suffered a month ago at the hands of Sasha with that, you know, crazy spot there that probably shouldn't have been done to begin with someone that's coming back from a neck injury so soon at least.
But at the same time, same scenario with Sting. I mean, this is just freak accidents. When you've had neck surgery, like Edge has said, or people had neck surgery, you're on borrowed time, especially if you're in the ring with the whole whiplash effect that you get. So I don't think it was anything intentional. I think nothing so impactful that something bad could happen. You would think something bad would happen.
But if you question the spot, though, where you turn your back to somebody, and obviously they gave the person, you know, if you can trust the person to tell you, hey, I'm not going to go at you hard, but your back is turned, so you don't know how hard they're going to come at you, though.
Listen, Jeff, when you're cleared to go in the ring, when you start calling spots and listen, don't do this or don't do that, that's one thing. But when you're in that ring, it looks like it's something completely different. You can't dictate to somebody, listen, Jeff, I'm working with you now, but you know my neck is bad, so don't drop kick me from behind the back. But wait, you're medically cleared. Shouldn't you be able to go all the way? I'm sure Paige would be the same way. Listen, let's do everything we normally do. Don't hesitate, because when you do stuff like that, that's when you get injured.
Definitely. So, you know, we don't know yet. I don't want to confirm yet, but I'm pretty sure WWE will address it in the near future. But if it is the end for Paige, I mean, my only thing is with Paige is, yes, she had a rocky last year and a half or so.
Yeah.
Everything's been documented about her and her relationship with Alberto Del Rio and, you know, the sex tape. Everything's been out there and leaked, so no need to get into that. But one thing I would say about Paige is it's not like you're like, oh, what could have been? Because she's been in the business so long. She won the Divas Championship her first night on Raw when she debuted. She's held the title on several times. So it's not like you can say, what if?
She was the first ever NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah, and when you see only 25, yeah, it's like, wow, only 25. But she's been in the business since like 13.
Yeah.
And then she's accomplished all she's accomplished at WWE. Like, what, to hold the title one more time, to hold the Women's Championship, to be in the Royal Rumble? Yeah, that's all great, but she's accomplished a lot in her time in WWE.
She has, but I think from just what we gather from talent, I think talent always wants to end on their own terms. Yeah, they never want something to dictate why. Let's look at sports athletes, anybody. You want to go out your way, and though she's 25, still has a whole bunch of years left in her to do whatever she wants to do. Like, great, she's been wrestling since she was 13. It just sucks that, you know, you're, at that age, you're told you can't do anymore when you still have a lot more to offer in ring.
And then one thing, too, that I wanted to mention that I just didn't feel I had the info to talk about or didn't think I was too informed, but it was something that happened late last night when they were talking about Roman Reigns and just his allegations, this new steroid thing where his name was dropped by Richard Rodriguez from Wellness Fitness Nutrition. I think he was in Miami. He kind of dropped the names of Roman Reigns and Mark Wahlberg, but I want to get to Roman Reigns because, of course, in 2016, he had the drug test, did a failed drug test of a performance enhancer.
Banned substance.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of interesting what will be the repercussions, whether there will be any, whether this has any validity. But it's something to think about, too. Me, honestly, if you want to put that in your body and you're here for entertainment to entertain me and you feel that's what you can do, it's your business. I don't think you're cheating in wrestling. I think that it's a showman's business, and what you do to your body, if that's what you choose to do, there's the pressures. I don't think there's pressures like there were in the 80s, you know, or early 90s, but I think the pressure is there. And if you're going to be a top guy, if you want to be compared to a John Cena, you have to look it. So he's making the ultimate sacrifice of putting these things, allegedly putting these things in his body to, you know, look the part. So to me, it really doesn't bother me. But I guess if you're the adult and your kid looks up to them, I think that's what WWE cares. And if this is going to be the face of the company going forward to, you don't want these things hanging on their head.
Yeah, I mean, from a personal standpoint, Jeff, you're right. Whatever an adult or a human being decides to do with their free time or a particular look they want to get or whatever they do outside of the genre of entertainment, it's completely up to them. I could care less, not to sound mean or anything by saying that, but you know, when it comes from a business standpoint, I could see why WWE concerns themselves with this, because although they're quote-unquote sports entertainment, they're not a real sport like you would in football or basketball or hockey, et cetera, et cetera. It's the wellness of the individual, because a lot of these types of things like steroids or performance-enhancing drugs or recreational drugs or street drugs can be abused. And the last thing you want to do is have that kind of scenario where somebody prematurely dies at a young age, like we've had in the last 10 years, where people have gone too soon doing to all the things that they've been using while they've been on the road. So I think from that standpoint, is there repercussions? I don't know. I think there needs to be more validity behind it. I think when it's just a rumor, that's what it is. So I think as the story develops more, we'll find out if there'll be any repercussions. And if there is, that could put a huge monkey wrench in a lot of plans they might have with WrestleMania coming up.
Don't think because Roman loses to The Miz on Raw 25 this Monday night, it's a punishment. Because I think the whole time it's been planned that Miz was going to get his title back.
Yeah.
So don't think that that's punishment or that in somehow is this beginning of the demise of Roman Reigns.
I remember just, all along it's been the buildup that who is going to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania? Exactly. Roman Reigns. He needs the title off him to go for the Universal title, so it would make sense.
So as far as Roman Reigns, this is what he had to say. I've never heard of Richard Rodriguez or Wellness Fitness Nutrition. I learned from the mistake I made nearly 2 years ago and paid the penalty for it. Since then, I've passed 11 tests as part of WWE's independent drug testing program. So there you go. That's Roman Reigns' statement that he made. And I think that unless a smoking gun is discovered, I think that's that. I mean, I really don't know what else you would do to Roman Reigns, nor do I think it's punishable now, because he didn't fail a test. It's just a name is linked. And if, say, he failed in 2016, then he's already served his punishment.
Yeah, but Jeff, you know anything like that with WWE,
bad press, bad publicity,
you're going to get punished for it anyway, regardless if you failed a drug test or not scenario and you know how many tries. It doesn't really matter. It's bad publicity, and the WWE wants to get themselves away from that since they are a publicly owned company, and they don't want that type of bad publicity on them.
The Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame, has announced its first inductee, and it's probably going to be the headliner, and it's Bill Goldberg. Of course, Goldberg had the amazing run leading up to WrestleMania in Orlando, lost the title of Brock Lesnar, the Universal title. I would say this run was more successful than the first time he was in WWE, but just your thoughts on Bill Goldberg being the first and probably headlining this year's Hall of Fame class of 2018 for WWE in New Orleans.
My thoughts is, who's next? That's it. Now, with Bill Goldberg, congratulations goes out to him. Some people might be like, well, why is he going to the WWE Hall of Fame? Listen, despite what you might feel about Bill Goldberg and his in-ring performance or how he does in the ring or how he works with talent and his difficulty creatively to put other guys over, you know, you can't take anything away from the impact he's had on the business ever since he debuted in WCW and had that run of the undefeated streak. You know, he was just larger than life and kind of set a huge impact in the business during the Monday Night Wars. So, you know, a lot of that credit goes to obviously the bookers, the writers, but he had to carry it. He had to convince people he was this, you know, unstoppable object. So all that credit goes to Bill Goldberg. So in terms of his impact in the wrestling business, he 100% deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
He was WCW's version of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And very successful. And just on his mere run in WCW, he is definitely Hall of Fame worthy. And, of course, WWE is Hall of Fame as far as wrestling everywhere. So, yeah, definitely a Hall of Famer and definitely a big name that'll headline 2018. So congratulations to Bill Goldberg. Any thoughts on who's going to induct him? Who do you think would induct him?
Brother. Wow. Yeah. You know, at this time, in this stage, in
Kevin Nash?
Maybe. But at this stage, like, maybe his son, his wife.
that
he probably
be possible
would want to, somebody in his family, right?
Probably want somebody in his family to do it too. In terms of who, I could see Triple H. I could really see that because they've obviously didn't have the best history in his first run in the WWE. I think they've patched things up there. I think he was a big, huge part of Bill coming back. So that might be it. I don't know, really. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who's going to be doing it, but I'm looking forward to that speech.
A lot
speech.
Of people.
Yeah, looking forward to that
Bischoff,
speech.
Maybe?
Maybe. That one, too. But like I said, that speech is going to be interesting because you know what? Bill always likes things scripted. But the thing is, when you get in front of that audience and they're chanting one more match or thank you and they're just getting riled yeah. up, we know how riled up Bill gets. So let's see what happens. Over, under, how much does he sweat on stage?
Over.
Over. Exactly. Those lights are going to be bright and he's going to be carrying a handkerchief with him. But again, congratulations goes out to Bill Goldberg. You know, it also just opens the door like who might be the next inductee. And we'll talk about that, you know, as we start seeing the names who could possibly be the next one. But, you know, not a bad headliner for WrestleMania.
We've got the Mixed Match Challenge underway. Finn Balor, Sasha Banks, successful over Shinsuke and Natalya. So far, so good.
Yeah, I would say so because, you know, it's been entertaining. For me, selfishly, as the fanboy that I am, to see Shinsuke and Finn Balor in the ring working together when I've seen a little bit of them in NXT. You just want that on the main roster so bad, but they're on separate brands. It was fun. It was exciting. It was something new. It was something different. Like I said, it was cool to watch on Facebook Live because it's just so accessible. I think I was looking at it. It had like maybe 169,000 people that were watching at that time when I was looking on Facebook Live. The crowd really got into it. Maybe since it was the first match, a lot of the crowd that were there for SmackDown really stayed for that one. Now, I don't know how much of them stayed to watch 205 Live, but you had a good response from the audience. So I think it's going to pick up momentum. I think initially for its first inaugural run, it's going to be successful. But we'll see because, again, you know, exercising these different platforms, the quality was good on Facebook. You didn't have any problems streaming it. I think this is a step into the future of what we're going to see eventually. And it's nice to see the intergender matches. I would just like to see, and I understand why WWE doesn't do it, I would love to see the intergender matches that we see on other promotions, not the WWE. I want to see the women and the men working together,
yeah,
not just
nothing.
That.
That. I mean, yeah, it just doesn't really float my boat. But.
No, but look at it from this perspective, Jeff. When, you know, for somebody's going for a hot tag, right, and they tag in their partner, immediately the other guy's coming in. So it's not like, for example, oh, you know, you're preventing them and he does the hot tag move where he's hitting both individuals and it's the whole momentum. No, it kind of kills everything in a way. So it's a little different, a little weird, but at the same time, that's just my perspective. I'd like to see that. Because we've seen that.
Trendsetter, the next time we're together will be at Pro Wrestling Magic Domino in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. We will be making our commentary debuts for that fine company. Are you ready?
We're ready. I don't think Pro Wrestling Magic's ready to what we're going to bring to the table. But it's going to be cool. It's something. It's definitely a new venture you and I are trying out. I was kind of hesitant on it, but you showed a lot of interest in wanting to do it. So I was like, you know what? Never say never, especially what we've done in 2017 and what we hope to do in 2018.
Just trying to hustle, yeah. Like Marty says.
It's about hustle. Of course, the grand hustler, Marty Elias, of course, he taught us a lot about that. But again, it's like leaving yourself open to new experiences. If I do it and I fall flat on my face, at least I can say I did it. Not that I'm going to fall flat on my face on this. I'm using that as an example. But it's just giving ourselves more range of things, like, for example, what I'm doing with Adventures with the Trendsetter, what we hope to do more with video and things of that nature, do more entertaining types of videos, not necessarily just vlogs. So it's just expanding horizons. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great event. You know, despite what you think about the commentating, I think it's going to be a great event regardless. A great card, and I can't wait to see it.
Yep. So also make sure we'll have interviews from Pro Wrestling Magic in Richfield Park, New Jersey. A lot of people are there. So we're going to get a bunch of interviews too for the YouTube channel that you can subscribe, guys. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, High Spot Podcast. So we're going to
give us a like, give us a comment, subscribe button, join the crew.
Yeah, exactly, man. Get on board, man, because we definitely do this for your support. Definitely want you guys to enjoy all the video content, so subscribe to that High Spot Podcast YouTube channel. Pro Wrestling Magic, of course, will be headlined by the amazing Battle Royal, the Chris Adams Battle Royal, in memory of their fallen friend at Pro Wrestling Magic. So definitely want to go out there, support. Tickets are still available, so come see us and the talent of Pro Wrestling Magic, and we will definitely hit it out of the ballpark as far as the in-ring commentary. So Trendsetter Man. I mean, there's so many ways to follow us. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, on Instagram and Snapchat, as well as our Facebook page, facebook.com/High Spot Podcast. Trendsetter, one final time, where can they listen to us on all the networks?
Well, if you want to listen to us, you can listen to us on iTunes. I'm sure everybody has iTunes now, guys. So leave us a 5-star rating, give us a review. You can also check us out on SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. And also, make sure you check us out on the various networks that we're on that we're so happy to be a part of. That is the Shining Wizards and B Plus Player Radio Networks.
And thanks to Brian Fritz, who now we can officially say we will be joining the Cheap Pops Network, which is a network started by the guys from Between the Ropes, Brian Fritz and Michael Weissman. More info on that in the next episode, too, as we begin our journey with Cheap Pops Network. Hopefully take the High Spot Podcast to another level so you can listen to us on, you know, more of social media platforms. But again, we thank you, the fans.
And if you can't wait till that, check our social media sites. Like I said, follow us all on social media, but also check our website, highspotpodcast.com, because we'll keep you updated on what the Jersey Red Crew is doing.
Next week's show, we will preview the Royal Rumble, and we will do it Vegas style.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah, I wish
I had the you're hearing it right now.
Looking forward to it, man. The Royal Rumble will 30 men strive to survive. You know, it's crazy, man. It's going to be awesome. We will preview the Royal Rumble from Vegas. We do the whole Festival of Friendship music playing there in the background. But again, thanks to the Trendsetter, I am Jeff Martin. Remember, these shows, this everything that we do, this podcast is strictly for the crew.